You're listening to The Purple Mystic, a podcast for the modern witch, with your host, Natalie Sedgwick. Welcome back to the Purple Mystic podcast for the modern witch. I am your host, Natalie, and today I'm talking with Eddie Massey. Now, I know you go by E. Massey. That's your name where your books and stuff are, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, because I noticed there's a pastor, Eddie Massey.
Eddie
Massey. I don't want anybody to confuse the two. So you are from the Poconos. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about the Poconos, kind of the area you're from, and maybe how that influences your practice?
Okay. The Poconos itself is, it's a mountain range, and it is very rural. My backyard is a state game land that goes on for miles.
That must be nice.
I'm fairly secluded. I do have a neighbor, it's a weekend house for him, so I'm basically by myself most of the time.
That sounds delightful.
I say no. When it snows, it's not so delightful.
Yeah. If you got to get out and get supplies, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I was thinking, yeah. I'd love the snow if I didn't have to, like, go get groceries or something. So
that's it.
Is that exactly the area you grew up in? I mean, were you raised in that area, or are you coming from another area?
I actually grew up straight in the heart of New York City. I went from New York City and New Jersey to Pennsylvania. So, made a couple of jumps there, So I get both ends of practicing, being able to practice in a city, because that's where I grew up, and I've been practicing for quite a long time. And moving out to the country did change my practice, because I can just go out to technically my huge mile-long backyard, which really isn't mine, but forage for anything that I need. So that's where it's changed. So my practice has more become what's available and what's around me, rather than ordering from a store. Although I have a store of myself and I can order what I want, but for my own personal practice, I just reach out and grab what I need to go and use the spirits of the land rather than externals and from other cultures and things like that. So
and I feel that that's actually kind of, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to disparage anybody's craft, so please don't mistake what I'm about to say. But I really think when you have the ability to be close to the land like that, your craft is better than with a bunch of store-bought stuff, because these are things you're putting your own energy into, even just by wildcrafting it.
I do agree to an extent, because I think magic can happen anywhere. You can definitely, whether you're in the city, there is still nature in the city, whether it's in a park or a crack in the sidewalk, there is still some form of nature. It's how we utilize what we have. That's what makes it a craft.
Right.
If you don't have that, let's say, mugwort grows kind of everywhere.
If you can't just run out and grab some belladonna or some, chickweed or something of that nature.
Right. That's a perfect example. That goes into the attempt where I was getting at. You don't have, belladonna, because I was looking for more of that underworld kind of herbs. Dandelion, which grows in cracks in a city, is perfect.
Oh, absolutely.
Underworld kind of work, the ancestors, things like that. You have those dandelion roots. So, you can utilize, it's how you utilize it, not what you have or where you get it from.
I totally agree. I just see a big trend, I guess, really, it's what I'm noticing or what's coming to my attention, is this need for people to have all of these fancy tools. I guess when you're new to the craft, you want to do it, quote unquote, right. So you think in your mind, you need all of these things to be able to do things. And I keep telling everybody, you don't really need anything but what's in your head, really. Whatever nature provides, you can utilize.
Exactly. I don't even think that's now. I think that's always been since at least the New Age movement, You know, and I put it, it almost kind of lumps itself. And I call, people may get a little upset by this, but I call it Cunningham-ism. Because when Cunningham kind of wrote those books and put it out to the, you know, put it out and made it accessible, easily accessible, because it was accessible before, but now it, when he started writing his books, it became easily accessible and very easy. And everything's about the tools. It's tools, this and tools. Yes, now tools are great, and you know, sacred objects that you use, that is all well, fine and dandy. But a lot of that is traditional too, like the tradition that usually Wicca. But traditional, what I consider traditional witchcraft, you know, like the basis of witchcraft, not the religion, but the basis of it, it is going out and just, you know, grabbing that leaf. You know, don't read those books on, you know, how many tools you need and how all this. Go grab an herbal book, or go grab, you know, a field guide. You're going to learn more and connect
absolutely
with those than now, from a book.
What are some of the field guides you have? Do you have a range of wild crafting books within your library?
I do not. And the reason why I don't is because that's the way I grew up. So it was always part of my life. So I learned it as part of my upbringing. So it wasn't like I had to study that, you know what I mean? I mean, of course I looked into it, I did, you know, study further with things, but it was part of my thing. We always went out into a forest. You know, I spent a lot of time in my younger years on a reservation. So I learned a lot of the herbs that way. My, you know, just, you know, I was in the Boy Scouts, you know, like,
oh, yeah, that'll definitely teach right you a few things.
You know, yes, they didn't teach the magical end of it. You know, that I had to, like, other from teachers or from, you know, from books and experimenting. You know, I always find that even experimenting is better than reading books sometimes.
Isn't the useful and / medicinal part of the use of plants part of the magic of plants?
And
I mean, it's not stated as such, but really it's hard to tease the two apart, in my opinion.
Exactly. Yep. They go hand in hand. They go hand in hand.
Definitely. So let's talk a little bit about your background. You said you spent part of your youth on a reservation. I assume then that you have some Native American roots.
On my mother's side, my grandfather used to take me out when I was younger. A lot of it I don't remember. I did go back later in life, but up in Montana, in Browning, I am, I don't know, half, quarter. We can never figure it all out. We don't put my numbers, you know. It's just
something.
But it's Piikani, which is one of the nations of the Blackfoot Nation. And I, you know, was on and off summers, you know, a couple of times here and there. I can't really talk about a lot of the things that I did learn, you know, but it wasn't like, okay, sit down. It wasn't a classroom set. You
right
know, it was like,
it's more, you know, in right, action, just kind of showing you, demonstrating, passing down some of that knowledge, I would think.
And, you know, with that, you know, that wasn't, you know, it wasn't magic. It wasn't talk like that. I didn't get into that until my aunt, who was initiated, was, it's still debatable whether it's a lineage or non-lineage, Gardnerian tradition. But she had gotten up in the 70s. She got up out of New York and went to California, and she actually met Sybil Leek and spend some time with a group out there. You know, she don't talk about the San Francisco days.
Right.
You know, didn't talk about them, except for what she kind of learned, you know. And then she came back to New York, and she was working with a couple of, I think one or two covens out in New York, which could be Long Island Line and British traditional, could have been New York Wicca, again, not really sure. The paperwork that we have, the her books, her notes, and all that is like all over the place. She wasn't very an organized witch.
Organized keeper of the knowledge.
Yeah. But she became my first teacher, and that's, you know, and I started to, at that point, kind of question, be like, you know, this is kind of the stuff we just grew up on. Like, you know, I started to see the connections there. And, you know, during that time, I'm not putting down any kind of, you know, British traditional and traditions and things like that. But there's almost, there is some dogma in there where it's like, this is it, you know, like, expand yourself in this knowledge, but not expand yourself in other types of practices that, you know, doesn't coincide with it. So I didn't like that. So I packed my bags and started studying stuff on my own. And years later, I went back to the reservation and learned more and, you know, all different branches. And I left the Wiccan, British traditional, those type of traditions, and really delved into more folk magic, you know, and learning from that and learning from different teachers and things like that. And then that led into getting initiated into Centenaria. And yeah, it just, I kind of go all over, but they're all completely separate. I don't mix it. I don't believe in mixing them.
I agree. I currently am working my way through the Bardic grade of the Obod. And I have really learned a lot going through that. And one of the things that drew me to it was the lack of dogma. They're very upfront with, we're going to share the teachings that we have acquired and have retained, you know, both through writing experience that have been passed down in some form or other, whether overtly or non-overtly through the Druidic tradition, but also our understanding, our modern understanding of the teachings that were ancient Druidism. And, you know, you can practice other things, you can do other things and still incorporate these beliefs. And that was one of the big draws for me, because I'm very gun shy of dogma, because I came from a very strict Christian household where we were not allowed to explore. You believed what my mother believed, and if you didn't, you pretended you did, as long as you were living in her house. You know, attending church with friends or looking at other faiths or religions was not encouraged. And I really felt that kind of stunted the growth a lot for me spiritually as a child, because I was one of those kids that would say, well, gee, Mom, if Jesus went out and taught his word to everyone, why is there a sea of white faces in our church? Where are all the Asian people? Where are all the Black people? Where are all the, you know, and she'd be like, shut up, because she couldn't answer. You know, so I stray from dogma. I understand your hesitancy to become involved. And that's been kind of some of my concerns with some of the more traditional lineaged systems. You know, how far can that lineage really go back?
I'm on the fence about it now that, you know, like, again, you know, I'm with my practice, things, I evolve, I change, you know, sometimes I go back, you know. I'm at a point right now where I'm kind of on the fence about that. And even like you were saying with, you know, with your Christian background, you know, when it comes to children, I always feel, let them explore. That's one thing that I will stand by 100% is let them explore their own. Don't bring them into your practice. I don't care if it's Christianity. Right. I don't care if it's Wicca. Do like, the, you know, all these, you know, I see it a lot. A lot of parents are like, oh, I want to raise my child in this. You shouldn't give them that demand. You know, they should be able to choose, because maybe they want to go Buddhist, maybe they want to explore this, maybe they want to do that. And that's because I think the experience that I had. However, there's a part of me that thinks that having that tradition, like a solid tradition, whether Christianity, whether it's British traditional, whatever, you know, I think that's great structure.
And that's the key. I agree with you. And in the studies, my PhD was in child development. So the studies on what they called religiosity or religion, you know, the teaching of religion to children shows that when they have that to fall back on, it gives them strength. And I definitely took something from my Christian faith growing up. It was a backbone for me. But I feel like you aren't just a backbone. You know, you have muscles and veins and limbs that branch off from that as you grow. And that the problem is so many of these things want to keep you just to the structure. And that's my concern with dogs. But I agree with you. I think we have a common core. that we need to make certain we're passing forward. I mean, there always has to be some sort of ethics to the practice, but people's take on that ethics is different. And that, I think, is where a lot of the conflict comes in. But I absolutely agree with you. It's an excellent structure from which to grow.
Right, right. I think, you know, what's happened over there, you know, millennials and, you know, like years, millions of years, you know, hundreds of thousands of years, is, you know, there's a fear in any kind of structured spiritual practice. There's a fear that they use to keep you on your, try to keep you on your path.
Yes.
Rather than, you know, feed that curiosity. Because usually when you feed the curiosity, whether child, adult, doesn't matter. If you feed that curiosity, it gets satisfied. And then they end up falling back anyway. You know?
Right.
And even I'm a perfect example of that. I'm finding myself going back to some of those practices, you know, of casting circle and the way it's done and this and that in my own personal practice, even though I know that there's no real solid foundation in that actual practice. But for some reason, I'm kind of finding myself once in a while falling back to that for the structure. Like the folk magic doesn't necessarily have a structured way of doing things. There are things that you must do within that tradition, but it's different. Like I find myself going back to that a little bit. So that's why I'm kind of on the fence right now. So you got me at a point where I'm like, at the point of changing things.
But you know, I see where you're coming from, and I understand your perspective, because when I read Gemma Gary's book, The Cornish Book of Ways, that was about British folk magic, really, from the area of Cornwall, specifically. And a lot of what she talks about doing, you see threads of that throughout traditional British tradition. Right. You see it in modern Wicca. You see it in the Druidism, even. It's those underlying universal principles of magic that I think underpin all of the different practices that are out there. You know, I think that having structure and understanding those basic principles is key to your growth. But at the same time, like you said, you'll cycle through where things resonate with you and where they don't. My problem with dogma is just exactly as you said, they use fear to keep you, quote unquote, on the straight and narrow. And the problem with that is fear is very restricting to your personal growth. If you go back to things for some reason, it's because they resonate with you. And to me, that's the divine speaking to you through that practice in some way, whether that's Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, methods of Native American tradition.
You're 100% right. You know, a lot of the newer practitioners, that eclectic thing, that doesn't sit right because there's no structure in that, you know, and sometimes, you know, that those practices of one tradition kind of go against some of the practices of another tradition. So you're kind of just throwing it all in the cauldron and seeing what happens.
Right. But, you know, we all learned that from Frankenstein, didn't we?
You know, I believe you don't truly grow in that sense, because you move on, but then next week you're going back to this, and next week, then the week after you're going back to this, you're going that. What did you really learn, and what became part of you in that sense?
Right.
And I think when you start in a tradition that is very structured, whether, you know, Gardnerian or Alexandrian, or Christianity or whatever, it gives you that structure to lay out later for you to experiment and learn. But it doesn't necessarily mean you have to take those practices, because, you know, you could read a book on Buddhism and take some of those practices and add that, or you could take the theology of it, or, you know, the methodology of it, and add that to your practice. That's okay. But you can't really take the structure that they believe in and add it with the structure, your Wiccan structure, because right. they kind of contradict sometimes, and you can't just pick and choose, you know? So, you know, and I get a lot of British traditional and you know, what's considered, I consider it initiatory witchcraft. Everybody considers it traditional witchcraft, but those British traditions, you know, Joe Gardner, all of that, that's what they did anyway. They compiled everything and kind of just threw it in the cauldron and used what kind of worked and made a structure around that. Now, that's perfectly okay. However, that's almost group structured rather than self-structured. Self-structured, well, when you do it with the self, there's no structure because nobody's leading you that way. Right. That's why I always kind of like wish, you know, there's a solid structure, and unfortunately there isn't. And that goes back to my Cunninghamism.
It's funny that you say that, because that brings to mind something that the late Raven Grimassi said in his book, The Witch's Craft. His major complaint in the first chapter of that was that people were doing exactly what you just said, where they're kind of picking and choosing. And he says, look, we've got to have some universality or it's no longer witchcraft. And I saw where he was coming from, but part of me disagreed, because to be frank, it's like something that Elder Starian Ravenhawk and I talked about, was that, you know, you're not with your coven 100% of the time. You're not with your group 100% of the time. And if that's the only time you're practicing your magic, then you're not really practicing magic, are you? You know, you're alone more than you're with your group. So, you know, magic should be incorporated in everything you do. But I agree that there's a structure. And that's what I'm saying, I think, is that underpinning. It's those core practices and beliefs, the manipulation of energy around us to accomplish a goal, whether it's through the use of tools, herbs, or your own, you know, intention, that is the core of the craft and what makes magic magic.
I mean, there's always fundamentals, you know, like and I always take that back to the Hermetic principles, you know, the laws of the universe. I mean, so everything goes back to all that. I don't care what you believe, you know, even when I teach my classes on, you know, the gods and goddesses and things like that, you can call them Shamalama Ding Dong. It's about the essence.
I think I'm going to do that from now on. What do you practice? Shamalama Ding Dong, courtesy of E. Massey.
Like, you know, who's your, you know, which in other words, bother me, like matron and patron. Oh, I Shamalama Ding Dong, because it's about the essence. It's not, you know, we put the faces to be able to reach that.
And that goes with something that I personally believe, is that, you know, there is a masculine divine and there is a feminine divine, and they manifest themselves in different personas and in different faces, depending, and they present themselves to you in a way that you can at that point in time relate to and connect to, because they're always connected to us. Yes. But they'll make themselves known in a manner that we can wrap our head around, because the infinite divine is so hard. If you sit there and ponder on that, your head's going to explode.
Right. Well, and that's just it, you know, and that goes back to, you know, whether you call it source, what do you call it? The universal mind, whatever you want to call that, God, even God, you know, in a lot of native traditions, you know, it's the great spirit, or, you know, like, they all have that. Every spirituality has a source.
Yes.
And that source, we cannot connect with that. We cannot fathom that. Our brains just would explode, like you said. So it's broken down into these, you know, male, female energies, because we all know life, that's what the universe is about. There's a positive, negative, male, female, whatever you want to call it. But right. our brains to understand that and break down that essence of the source, we put names and faces. And sometimes, you know, so you have Venus, you have Aphrodite, you know, or however you, you know, whatever you want to call them, you know, like there's a specifics of that essence that the ancient cultures broke apart and go, oh, well, this resonates a little bit more with this type of energy. So obviously, I guess she's, you know, going to be the, it's like a tree, you know, it's, that's the branch of like beauty and love, you know, so we're going to name that this, but it's the same strain. It's the same tree that all goes down to the source. It's just broken up so that we can understand it because we're humans and we have small minds.
Right, exactly. You know, we have, once we have been released, well, here's how it was explained to me and how I understand it. This made perfect sense to me. Physics, the science of physics, because see, there's always an argument with my husband that how can you believe in magic when you have a master's of science degree, dot, 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 dot. And I'm like, because they're one and the same to me. I don't delineate between the two. To me, one supports the other. It's like saying you believe in God, but you're going to follow science. Well, you know, there are groups that think those two ideas are opposed. And I never thought that. I thought science explained to our understanding how the gods work. Yeah. And how they make happen what happens. So to me, there's no delineation there. They're one and the same. But also to me, there's aspects of spirituality that cannot be explained by pure science because we don't understand it yet. Yes. There's not a way for us to scientifically explain it. So you just have to accept it on faith. And, you know, one of those things is that, well, you know, if you don't believe in witchcraft, flip a light switch. You know, 2000 years ago, if you'd done that, they would have called you a witch because all you're doing is manipulating that energy to create an outcome, which is to bring light to the room. Boom.
Yeah.
You know, you could add your shamalama ding dong as you do it.
Yeah.
And they'll think that's a magic word. You know, abracadabra, boom, there's light, right? And the Lord said, let there be light, and there was light, and it was good. You know, I mean, it all kind of goes back to that same sort of principle for me. And so I totally forgot where I was going with this. Oh my God, the train has crashed. I'm sorry. Yesterday was an absolutely horrific day and my mind is still recouping. But I mean, I think you and I kind of think parallel. I think we definitely agree on specific kinds of understandings. Oh, that's what I was saying, is that science doesn't necessarily discount witchcraft. I mean, again, you know, there are 10 levels. Physics teaches us there's 10 dimensions. We exist within the third dimension. So we're physical. Everything has to be brought into the third level and fourth level, which is mind. Beyond that is spirit. So when you get up into those higher levels of thinking and understanding of soul material and the spirit and source, you can't comprehend that on a third dimensional level or on a fourth dimensional level. It goes beyond that.
That goes back to those hermetic principles where there's different planes. You know?
Right.
So I believe that all spirituality, all religions really go back to those principles.
Because I agree.
It doesn't matter, you know, what you believe, that the foundations of it all go back to those same principles. Science does too, you know, and look where science and religion really stem from. When you look at, you know, ancient cultures like Greece and stuff like that, they were almost synonymous at times, you know, when you had alchemy, you had, you know, all of that. And that, it wasn't until later that it broke off into different things, but there's a lot of excellence.
Absolutely. And you know, I really, I have a great respect for those that can verbalize that, because I have a hard time verbalizing my thoughts a lot of time. It's like I hear it in my head, and you would think just to open your mouth, but I'm like, because it's so vast that I can't quite get it to come out the way it makes sense in my head. And it makes me feel stupid. So let me talk to you a little bit now about your time in New York. Now, were you part of the horrible Herman whole Lady Rhea group or?
Yes, I do. I was not part of the group. I did spend a lot of time there. Because of my aunt, basically, you know, she was very involved in that. And even though she doesn't remember, but I met Lady Rhea when I was like 13, 14 years old. Through my aunt. So I was part of that. And then when I went to art school in the city, and, you know, I would go there like every day. You know, I would go there every day, get yelled at, you know, and for hanging out and things like that. But, you know, I was a part of it, but I wasn't involved.
Gotcha. Now, totally forgot what I was going to say. Can see that train of thought keeps going right off the rails. Woo! Okay.
Talking about New York.
Yeah. Is it too early to have that glass of wine? I'm sitting here drinking my English breakfast tea. I don't think it's doing anything for me. yeah, New York. So now, you know, I am someone that I live in Texas. I've lived in Texas most of my life. I was born in Colorado, in Denver, and I have some memories of Denver. But basically, we moved to Texas, to San Antonio, Christmas break of my first grade year. So I was, what, maybe five and a half? And so I grew up in San Antonio. Now in San Antonio, there's a large Hispanic influence. You heard talk about Santeria, but it was something that was, you know, kind of forbidden, that you weren't really, and in my mother's house specifically, you were not encouraged to ask questions or explore. So, but Texas tends to still be very rural in a lot of the parts. And where I live now, although it's growing rapidly and I don't like it, It's kind of rural. Denton County is still considered a rural county, but it's quickly becoming not a rural county. And it is considered part of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. So it's very big out here. But do you find that you appreciate the isolation of living in the country more? Do you feel that it helps your practice, or do you ever miss kind of having that city life for you?
I you know what happens? I do miss it on occasion. And it's more like socially, not so much based on my practice. But I mean, everything goes hand in hand in some way, in some form. But there are times where I do miss it. And then I go, you know, I'll go down for Witch Fest and present and be a part of that. I love that weekend. I love going down there and being in the city and stopping off at the old pizza shops and, you know.
Right. Yeah. That's the key word. You just mentioned my favorite thing on the planet. Food. Food
and alcohol. I'll stop by a bunch of different places, pick up stuff and take it all home, put it in the freezer. But by the end, I want to go home.
Right. You're happy to have that peace and quiet.
And there are times where, you know, like even by me, you know, a half an hour away, there's a thing, you know, not a city, but there's a cultural center, I guess you could say. It's a town. When I'm craving that culture, that's where I go.
Gotcha. That sounds like me. It's like, I like to be out here. Of course, now it's getting so busy out here where we are. It used to be that there was nothing out here but farmland and a restaurant that was put into an old barn, just so that the people that owned the little mobile home park across the street could call it a town and sell alcohol, because Denton was a dry county. Mm-hmm. So they had to make it a city of its own in order to be able to sell liquor at the steakhouse that they owned, that they turned their old barn into. Now we've got like these three neighborhoods. The neighborhood I live in was one of the first three neighborhoods out here. And now there are 17 new neighborhoods going north. So all of the farmland out here is being eaten up with houses. And they didn't expand the highway properly. They didn't plan for a proper expansion. So it's very congested. There's traffic. There's sirens all the time. We used to have a lot of coyotes out here. And a lot of deer. And now it's like the deer you see are the deer that are dead on the side of the road, and the coyotes are gone. It saddens me because I loved listening to them at night. And I'm like longing to get out of here. I'm like, now that the kids have moved out, can we sell the house and like move somewhere further away?
Yeah, and I do love it. You know, I'm getting the itch. However, I don't know. Maybe this part gypsy in me. I don't know. Like, I get itches, and I'm like, eh, you know, I liked it now. I'm good. You know, yes, I love walking to the waterfall like 10 minutes away. You know, I love all that. But this, I don't know. I'm having that itch. I think mainly because, you know, we just went through with everything that we went through and being kind of like home all the time.
Right.
I have that itch. I want to be around people. You know, like, I'm even, you know, like, I do a lot of group work because of the store, and, you know, I basically am, you know, the staple up there, pretty much. You know, there's, of course, there's other groups, but, you know, so I have that group work, but it's not the same. And I think that's why I'm kind of peeling back some of the things and going back to some of those older practices, because I'm craving that coven work. I'm craving that solid group work, not just like, oh, well, who's coming tonight, you know? And that is not going to happen up by me. You know, it's
that kind of the dichotomy I experience. You know, going back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago about, well, you know, you're not with your group all the time, but and trying to avoid the dogma of a lineage, so to speak. But at the same time, I do think that there's growth in working with others, and that there are times when that kind of work is necessary or is something from which we need. We're not creatures born in isolation. We need other people. And I think 2020 has been the year for, I am so sick of being by myself. I want to be with other people. You know?
And I've seen it in the explosion of the interest in traditions like Gardnerian. You know, I've seen a lot of people looking for that information, finding out, you know, once they get to that point and be like, you know, that's not for them, but there's that interest, because I think people really want to get back to that
community,
that coven kind of feel. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think a lot of people, they don't realize, you know, just because you're in a coven, and I'm talking about like traditional initiatory covens, not just a bunch of people that get together,
right.
You know, they're outside of that, you have your own personal magic too. It's not like you're just sticking with what goes on in coven. You can do your own personal magic outside of that. That's what makes us anyway.
You should be doing that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. So, but I think there isn't that interest now. I've seen a lot of it come about in the community, and shying away from, you know, or I don't want to say shying away from personal practice, you know, or solitary. And I think that comes, you know, it's the drama. It's not even a dogma anymore. It's the drama that comes along with people. But
yes, thank you. The politics. The politics. I despise, yeah. Cannot stand, absolutely hate politics of any kind. But when you get a group of people together, there's always going to be some form of politicking going on. Well, and
there is. And see, but when people say, oh, I'm solitary because of the drama, but they're thinking of those groups, you know, I separate it with group. There's a difference for me between coven and group. Just because a bunch of solitary witches got together and they come and practice and do the wheel of the year of year, that's not necessarily a coven. I consider covens part of initiatory. So that's when you get a bunch of those people. Now, I ran a coven for 2 years in Pennsylvania that was very mixed, and I kept it very, you know, and it, just a bunch of people getting together, you know, there was no fighting, there was none of that, because we had our guidelines and we had all, you know, all that kind of things, and we respected each one of their personal things. And it was fun, it was nice, it was a good thing. It was a group, it was not a coven. And I think that's where people kind of, they shy away from it, because what happens in groups, when you get a bunch of groups together, you know what I mean? When you get a bunch of people together in a group, there's going to be drama. It's
a human nature thing. It is.
Right. So people, they want to shy away from that, so they say solitary. But we still have, especially now, we're craving that thing. But then those people are fighting like, oh, but I don't want the drama. You know, so they start looking into those traditional covens until you there's the dogma involved and you know, the structure. People are afraid of the structure, too.
Right.
You know, it's not easy. You know, none of it is easy. Even if you're solitary, it shouldn't be easy. If it's easy, you're doing it wrong.
You're doing it wrong. Exactly. It, you know, and in their days, because like in on our YouTube channel, for Which is the Moon, we've talked about going into magical slumps. And I think that's very normal, you know, to have days where you just don't feel magical. I mean, you're like, ech, I don't feel like doing anything today. I can't get my head into anything. I want to do something, but I don't want to do it.
And it could be years. You say, I took a little break in between there, but yeah. I understand why that break had to happen, because I had to grow as a person too.
Right.
You can't just, you know, I mean, I grew up in it, so it was always around me, but, you know, I was probably put into that to grow as a person, which later rolls over into growing spiritually, because you know, you went through life, you went through things, and that's the shadow work that everybody should be doing. You know, is to understand yourself too, because when you understand that, your magic is even going to get better.
Oh, much stronger. And I think sometimes taking those breaks makes it stronger for that exact reason. You have to recharge yourself. Yeah. And if you're not, you know, doing not just witchy self-care, but self-care, I mean, if you're not taking care of your mental and physical status, your magic is going to slow. It's not going to be as effective. It's not to say it won't work. It just won't be as effective. Right. And it's not going to be as strong as it would be if you were taking some time to focus on, okay, you know what? I'm just not feeling this today. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have a cup of tea and watch a funny movie, because that's mentally what I need right now in order to process all of this stuff going on. And I think that this year has been really good for trying to bring focus to that, because I think, like you said, a lot of people are just so isolated now that they're like, I really need to be around something. And those cycles are healthy for us. It's a circle.
It is. Right? It is. You know, it's funny, because I was actually during the shutdowns and all that, I was like, I was excited, really, because that gave me an opportunity.
Yay, I get a break.
Right, exactly. I got a break. I could focus on my book. I could do all this other stuff. But you know what ended up? I didn't do anything. I didn't write. I did absolutely nothing. Everything kind of went down on this thing. It wasn't because I fell into any depressions or anything like that. It was just.
You needed the break. Because I had the same thing. I've been working on my latest book for probably about a year now, and I really haven't made a lot of headway. But you know, I mean, I've also got my speech practice, and you know, I've got my family, and you know, so I thought the same thing. I was like, yay, I don't have to step out of the house. I can work on my book. And yeah, no, didn't happen.
Yeah, and then once it's funny, because once I got into the mode, you know, and started, you know, putting back structure, you know, I'm like, all right, I can't take this, you know, 3 months and I need some structure. I need something, you know, and work on my book. Then all of a sudden everything opens up and I'm like, oh, I got to go back to the store. You know, it went right back in. But yeah. I felt I utilized that time. You know, people, you might want to put it as, you know, like how people follow the wheel of the year, like the darker days are more introspective. That happened for me, because I don't follow that, you know, and I don't think that's for me personally, I don't think that's enough to do it once a year. Let it happen on its own. Let it, you know, put, you know, the universe put COVID here, you know, for people to actually do that, take that break.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like a little reset button. I always said with this whole thing, the whole pandemic, there is a silver lining in all of this.
I think nature needed the reset from us. I think she said, you know what, folks, I think it's time for you all to go to your room.
Yeah.
Personally, you know, because There was a lot of regrowth and reburgeoning of species that were being depleted or kind of not being where they needed to be in terms of the cycle. And yeah, absolutely, I agree. Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your book and your shop. You've mentioned the shop a couple of times. Is it on a brick and mortar? Is it an online shop? Do you offer both?
It is both. I started the business as an online shop and then moved to a brick and mortar in the last December. And then we had to shut down.
Right.
It's still going. Still going. I'm looking into branching out, actually. It's not my 100%, it's not like, I have to do everything for the shop. I'm not the retail person.
right.
But, for me, it was a hub for everything that I do in the post. I needed someplace, my clients have gotten, really big in the area. And then I got tired of reading out of my house. So I needed that space for that. I also run the Pocono Witches Festival. So yep. I needed to have that.
I'm going to talk a little about that. my mind. So talk about that. Tell everybody a little bit about the Pocono Witch Festival. Because this year that was online, right? Yeah. And it's different than Witch Fest in New York. I mean, it's...
Yes, we went on. We had to go online. It was a back and forth thing to not do it because of the mandates. But I wanted to keep the buzz going because it would have been our second year. I started it. Well, it was my guides who turned around to me and said, "You're going to throw a ball." And I was like, "Okay." So I'm thinking, rent a VFW, small hall, 60 people. Satisfy my guides, Well, it turned out I ended up getting an entire resort, and it became 3 days, and and I still rolled with it. I trust my guides. I still rolled with it, and we had over 2,000 people, and it was and that's where the store came from. I turned that over, the profits from that, and turned it over to the store to create that hub, not only for myself, but for the community, because obviously there's a community, because otherwise people wouldn't come out. And so that's what I kind of did with that. And like I said, we had this second year, we had to go virtually, and I wanted to keep that rolling from the year, because you take a break, people forget. So, next year it'll be bigger, even bigger. I have a lot of plans involved going on already for next year. And hopefully it will be in person.
Very good. Well, that's very exciting, because I know that it's hard to get a small business going. I don't think people understand the amount of effort and time that goes into a small business. When you tell people you own a business, they automatically think that you're wealthy and you take $6 million vacations. And I'm like, dudes, no, I'm tied to the phone. I have two phones and two iPads. I'm tied to all of them constantly between the two businesses. And I think that's part of the reason why 2020 came about, because we needed the break.
You're right. You needed that break. Like I said, the store is not my only,
Right.
I have three businesses, and, they all mingle within each other. But you're right. It was having that break. You really needed that break. From all that, I was able to shut off my business phone.
Exactly.
That was, I shut it off for a little bit. I was just like, there's no readings coming in. I'm going to shut this off. If they want readings, they can email. They can go through the store website, through all that. There's no reason to call because the store is closed. So shut it off.
And I agree. I definitely think that, that's a necessary thing. As a business owner, sometimes you have to detach. It's very hard to do when you are a business owner, because it's your responsibility. You've got to keep it going, and you're accountable to your clientele and to your vendors and your product and all of that. Here's a technical question for you. When you were starting your shop, and you said originally it started out just online, how did you promote yourself? How did you get your clientele?
A lot of the clientele that I had, I already had from readings and things like that. I've been reading for over 30 years, so I have clientele all over the world. So to turn, I took that, put that into that, and the use of social media really in promoting and doing that. I have a background in promotion, though musically it still runs the same. You're still promoting something, so. I utilized that and turned it over, and then it became successful enough for where I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to do a brick and mortar, and that's it. It kind of just grew from there. It was kind of like all happened all at one time, and it just keeps growing. Things keep growing, and I'm thinking about expanding, and we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well,
I let my guides go.
that
Ha
I think though when you have the talent and you have a very fetching personality. Yeah, I think people find it easy to talk to you, and that draws people to you. That makes it a lot easier than if you have no people skills, obviously. If you have no people skills, you probably shouldn't be reading anyway, but you know what I mean. It's oh yeah, death card. You're gonna have some change, sister. Yeah. Oh, tower card, and it ain't gonna be good. You know, I mean,
Oh,
drop it on people like that, but yeah, that's pretty good. Let's talk about your reading style then, since you have been reading for 30 years and everybody has their own style for reading. How do you do things to prepare for your? I mean, I've talked to a lot of people. Me personally, I like to have a few minutes to meditate and kind of clear my mind of other things that are going on so that I can be focused. I don't have to do that because the minute I'm doing a reading for someone, that's my focus. But I like to, for my own self, kind of take a minute to detach from Natalie to connect with whomever I'm connecting with. That I'm doing the reading for. Do you have any rituals or any specific things that you do that are personal to you before you do readings, or do you just
nope.
say, let's get her done?
Yep. I jump right in. The only time I'll take a break is really when it's negative readings, because I want to kind of clear my mind and detach from the previous person. But there's nothing that I do. I know a lot of people, they set up all these crystals and candles and, the whole bunch of different things. And that's all fine and dandy if that works for you. But no, I don't. I don't. In that way, my style, I don't know, I never thought of it.
Well, do you always do like specific, like traditional Celtic cross or 12 card spread? Or, do you do what you're
I've
drawn to do? I guess would be a good way of.
multiple ones. Regular generalized readings, I do use the Celtic cross because that was the way I was taught. But the reverse, not reverse, and all of that, and even sometimes the positions change because for me, I'm just laying out the cards, and it's like, it's like turning on the television. You turn on the television, that's just you're just pressing the button. You didn't write the movie. You didn't do the, that's how I kind of view it. You mentioned like the death card, and that's a good one to bring up because. Maybe for you, I'll read it for you, and yeah, it could mean change, but I could read it for somebody else, and it could be, oh, you're getting married. Like, I don't use the meanings of the cards, I don't use any of that. It's what I get and symbolisms that are in the cards that are more like, oh, you're looking at this part of the card, this is going to remind you of this, and it's the way
Thank you.
it's universal language, it's like
Yes,
those.
I agree. I tend to take the very first impression, and people, you know, I'm in a few tarot groups on Facebook, and it drives me nuts when I see these things come up, like, do you or don't you read reversals? Why or why not? And you see all the, I just don't even get involved because I personally don't read reversals specifically. To me, the cards are archetypal and there's a message in the card. I'm going to get that message the minute I see the card, whether it's something specific within the card that gets my attention or a general meaning to the card itself. And how it lays out next to the other cards. I use the Death card and the Tower as an example because those are two that people bring up all the time in these groups. But you know, it could it changes and it changes with the deck even. That's why when I'm going to do multiple readings for people, I personally will either have incense because I like to energetically cleanse the deck between readings to clear out the energy from the previous reading, or I will change the deck and rest the deck. But that's my personal, that's the way I was taught. So it's not like everybody has to do this. This is
Right.
what
Yeah, and that's just it.
spirit guides me
No,
to do.
exactly. There's no set rules. Like, and it rolls over into anything in a way that we do on that sense. That there just because it comes with a book, I always tell people just buy your deck and throw out the book.
That's yeah, I don't think I've ever really, well, that's not true. There is one deck. I just got one that I backed on Kickstarter called the Hieronymus Bosch deck that is based on his artwork. And it's got some interesting takes to it. So I kind of picked out a few cards and then I read what he had to say about them because I wanted to see if what I was interpreting was in line with what the artist had in mind when he created the card. But that doesn't mean I'm ever going to pick the book up to use it in. I don't.
That's
I go with what I see, what I'm told. I hear it like a voice in
right.
my head.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But in that case, in that scenario, you're really looking at the interpretation of the symbolism that the artist was doing. That's not
Right.
really like picking up and looking the meaning of the card. That's like, well, you know, all right, so he drew a pair of scissors. What did that mean to the artist so that you
Right.
can connect with the cards? You know, that's
Exactly.
a little, you're connecting with the art, the symbolism, not
Well,
so
this one
much
is
the
a
meaning.
particularly interesting card. I don't know if I should even bring it up on the thing, but yeah, if people want to know, they can go see the reveal video on my channel. It was just, I was like, boy, that's an interesting take on that card. Is that the card I think that is? And I went and looked. I was like, oh, it is. Oh yeah, I kind of had the same meaning. I was sort of picking up from it. So that's a plus, you know, but it was just very strange that he chose that particular image. But yeah, exactly. I mean, for me, you know, when I do readings, it depends on kind of what the client's looking for and what I'm feeling from the client as to what I'll do with the reading. A good example I can give is that I had a reading for a patient recent, a patient, listen to me, now I'm mixing my business as a client. She wanted a custom spread, and her concerns were her relationship and her finances. And I kind of felt that the two were tied. So when I did her reading, I did a 12 card spread, but I pulled all of the cards out except for the majors and the suits of pentacles and cups. And that's what I was drawn to do for her. And I think I got a far more precise reading for her than I would have if I would have thrown in swords and wands.
Right. You know, if you go, you know, and that's just it, you know, like, I mean, a lot of the spreads that I use or even in my books, you know, I've created out of not so much my own, but, you know, just over the years because of the way the guys say, oh, well, this, and I offer that to my clients too. You know, if they can come in, I do like a mirrored relationship, things like that. But, you know, if it's just a general, yeah, I'll just do the general because that's like more of like, I always tell people a general is like a snapshot of your path of where you are right now.
Right.
And that could be finances, the most important thing that's going on your path, you know, and not spiritual path. It could be spiritual, but, you know, just where you are right now. And a lot of times it's not such things that people see, you know, sometimes, like you said, that things can go hand in hand. You're worried about finances, but maybe you should be worried about your love life,
Right.
you know?
And you know, it's funny you bring that up because in the last reading that I did, I didn't remove any cards from the deck. I I was going to, and then I thought, no, I'm just going to do the whole thing and see what turns up. And her primary concern was, I don't ask people their specific question. I actually prefer not to know it. I just need to know the general area. Are you talking about love? Are you talking about finances? And things will pop up for me. And it one of the cards that pulled up was the Six of Pentacles. And I said, I'm getting this feeling that this card pertains to a concern that your partner has about where you are financially, and that's impacting how your partner is relating to you right now. And she said, it's funny because that's exactly what's been going on. She says, it's amazing how you were able. I said, it's not amazing. It's that's spirit that's got being guided. That card was there for a reason. It's not random.
Exactly. Everything, that's the thing. With cards, with a lot of it, there's no such thing as randomness. There's a reason for everything. You may not see it, you may not know it, you may not even understand it, you may not even learn from it, but there is a reason for everything.
Right, exactly. And when I first pulled that card, I'm like, I'm not really sure why this card's popping up here. But as soon as I saw her face, I was like, but clearly it makes sense to you. I said, so this is what I'm being told applies to this card. And she was like, that's just so amazing that you could tease that out. I'm like, it is guidance. I'm not teasing anything out of the cards. The cards are instructing me.
I honestly, I take that step further. It's not even the cards instructing me, it's
No,
the
it's the spirit. It's spirit guiding. I was just about to correct myself on that. It's, the cards are a tool, just a tool. And it's that spirit that's speaking within your mind, or some people he see it, or some people, I hear it.
I
I
get both.
hear
It's a
it.
lot. Mine's a lot of it's weird because if I can break it down to explain it, I have to say, well, I hear it and see it. It's almost
I feel it.
synonymous each other. Like it's like, I don't know, it just is. Like I
Right.
believe
It's difficult to put into words, isn't it? Yeah, exactly.
it is.
I hear a voice in my head often, but I also sense it. It's like a feeling.
Yeah.
So I
I always
just
try to
know.
explain it like it's like pictures that speak.
Now,
Like,
here's
and
another
that's
question
it's
for
things like that
you.
why I don't teach tarot at all because I can't,
Yeah,
because I don't
exactly. I've had
understand
people say,
myself.
"Can you teach me how to read the cards?" Not really. I mean, it just you I can tell you what general associated meanings are for the cards, the archetypal meanings of the cards, but that card might give you a totally different meaning in a reading. It's what you hear. It's tuning into that spirit, that universal energy that we were talking about before that. So tapping into source to gain that information, whether you want to consider that your ancestors, your deity, a mixture of the two, something is communicating to you because it's occurring at that fifth dimension and above level. And it's very difficult to explain that, and you cannot teach it.
Can't.
I don't think you can teach
Yeah,
it. You could teach people the cards. You could teach people what they mean. You can encourage people to practice it for themselves, because I do think that that's the way to tap into it eventually. But that doesn't mean that just because you know what the cards mean, you can do an accurate reading for somebody.
right, exactly. And that's why I always say, I give pointers like throw away the book, meditate on those cards, like each one every day. Pick a card, whatever, however you want to do it. And really understand the symbolism in that, not only in the art and what the artist was trying to portray with that symbolism, but how you connect to that symbolism. Because a cup for you may mean something else than it does for me, and it's going to trigger that communication. So I tell people, like little pointers like that, and listen to that, like you said before, listen to that first thing, even if you don't think it fits. If it
Right.
doesn't fit in the meaning, if it doesn't fit in the reading, just spit it out because 98% of the time,
You are spot on. Yep. Even if the person says, oh, no, that can't be it. I mean, I've had people that have come back 6 months later and they were like, you know, when you said this, I was just like, yeah, whatever. But 3 months later, you know, here's what happened. And you had seen it coming down the line. And I was like, well, you know, that's the thing is I tell you what I see, what comes to me. And not even really what it's what I see, but more what it says, what I hear. Yeah, it's very hard to quantify that into words.
Yes, I tell when I with readings like that, and they was just like, yeah, this doesn't make any kind of sense. I was like, look, just put it in your pocket, save it, and then see what happens. You know, and 90% of the time they come back 6 months later and they go, oh my God, you were right.
Yeah. Oh my God, you'll never believe. Well, you actually probably will. But go ahead and tell me. Whoa.
I had a client and I was doing a reading and I kept getting a pregnancy. I kept getting, and she's like, Adam, she's like, I can't have children. I can't have children. It's not possible. You're wrong. Yeah, well, I guess you got pregnant.
Yep.
Yeah.
Surprise! And I told you so, you know.
Right.
Te dije. As we like to say here in Texas. One of the other things that I wanted to talk with you about is your podcast, This Old Witch. And it's been so much fun to listen to your podcast. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about how that idea came about. Was it a mutual idea, or was it something that you thought of and you approached your
That was my guides.
Okay.
That was
So talk
my
about
guide.
that. Let's share a little bit about your podcast and how that's going for you and go ahead and give it a plug so others can tune into it if they're not already listening.
Well, it's This Old Witch, and it's myself and my co-host Alexander Cabot,
Who
and
I adore.
we have gotten so close since this. He's like a
Don't tell him.
couple
I'm sure
months.
he doesn't know that I, you know, like worship the ground he walks on.
But we started. We're on our 15th episode, I believe. And it has completely taken off. It wasn't expected. It was kind of, all right, my guy said do this experiment, kind of put it out there. And it has taken off extremely well. We're probably at about a good, at least on Facebook, because those are the numbers I kind of look at, because we broadcast live video through YouTube and Facebook. We're also live on Spreaker, but that's only audio, and then it's on every podcast platform that you could think of. But on Facebook alone, we have over 3,000 followers, listeners. Well, listeners, not followers, because people don't always hit that button. But looking at the numbers, we have at least over 3,000 just on that alone. So it blew up. It blew up. It was unexpected, and it's really a lot of fun. That's my downtime. And the premise of it is two different witches, two different backgrounds. He's from New York, and I'm from the Poconos. I'm the country, and he's the city witch. And that was the premise. That's how it started. But it kind of it's taken its own. It's on its own now. It's not even really following so much of that premise, because it's become an educational tool for us to, not teach people in a certain way, but to broaden their ideas. And that's why we bring on a lot of people and elders, within the community, to basically not only talk about themselves and promote and things like that and ask. We don't really do a question thing either, similar to you. We kind of just let it roll. But it's become such a platform for education, really.
And I think that that's one of the things that's appealing about it is the fact that it's not this scripted, okay, we're going to sit down and this is strictly what we're going to discuss here. Because I think true intellectual thinking and learning comes when you're sharing ideas with one another and there's a natural flow to that, excuse me, that energy. And that's when those teaching or teachable moments come about so that the topic naturally goes that direction. And I think that that's what makes your podcast so darned appealing, besides you two little adorable cuties that run it. But I definitely, I mean, it becomes a platform anytime that you're putting that out there. Now that brings up the whole idea of silence within the craft, because I don't know if you're getting what I'm getting, but I'm getting some flack from a few people that I don't even know that are all up in arms about talking about things in my podcast or on our YouTube channel. Because I'm a member of the Witches of the Moon YouTube channel that's been running for several seasons. I wasn't one of the original hosts, but I currently own the channel, and then I have my own personal channel, and I've gotten some really nasty comments from people that are like, "You shouldn't be talking about this. Whatever happened to silence?" Well, silence and oath breaking to me comes from those initiatory traditions that not everyone follows. And if there are certain things that you are oath bound to keep silent due to your association with an initiatory practice, then you should. Absolutely, you should honor that. But I'm not part of an, well, I mean, I was initiated with the OBOD, but I'm not part of a traditional lineaged, a tradition that requires that. There are certain things for the OBOD that we're bound to silence on, and I don't talk about them.
Well, I think part of the, for us, we don't let it get to that either, because we do respect, because we both come from initiatory backgrounds, so we there are things that we don't bring up, and naturally, I think. I don't even think we keep it. We don't tell them, like, well, let's not talk about this, and if the person feels that they don't want to talk about it, they don't want to talk about it. I don't, I, again, when it comes to that, I'm kind of on the fence. I am a little for this gatekeeping thing, because there are things in traditions that we don't talk about. I can sit and talk about my initiatory things and stuff that I'm initiated in, like Satudarya
But you're not divulging any information about that specific practice. And that's what I'm not understanding. I'm like, look, I'm not talking about anything that you can't go pick up any book and read about in some form. I think the big one I'm thinking of right now is the use of the Great Rite as a magical practice. And to me, that is something that is 100% totally, absolutely sacred and should be treated as such. And I stated that in my video. I wasn't sitting there talking about specifics. I mean, it was a general topic about why is it so, why do we consider it so sacred? And how does that fit into the tradition and the symbolism of the chalice and the blade and all of that? And man, somebody just went all kinds of off.
Well, I think, and I think most likely the reason why I would assume they probably went off, is initiatory witchcraft. Again, my term for British traditional and any kind of initiatory, true initiatory witchcraft. They're starting to cut people off because, people will do it on their own at home, and there is a specific way to do this, and there's a reason why it's in these traditions, and it kind of got put into the public. Again, I'm going to go back to Cunninghamism. It kind of got put into the public, the basics, the foundations of what that rite is. And I think maybe opening it up to a public forum for people and discussing it kind of takes that away from that practice. So that person may have felt that you're kind of crossing the line where they're trying to cut that off now. They're trying to do away with that Cunninghamism that, no, this is not something that is for everybody. So.
I totally agree with that. And that was something I even stated in the video is that, if you are part of an initiatory group or a coven, there may be aspects of this that for you are not discussed and not what have you, but I don't think it serves the community as a whole to try to hide something either. I
Well,
think
I disagree with that.
It's a very thin line, and you have to understand why that gate is there, because this is something that, it's, I think part of my issue and what I was trying to discuss in the video is that I don't want people to think that it's just sex. You know, it's so much bigger and more than that, and there's so much more to it because we are animals and we engage in certain acts. And in that way, we take part in some form of what could be considered a divine creationary, whatever sort of whatever, regardless of how that act occurs or with whom. So, you know, I think that when you try to make something, you know, my issue is Hollywood. I think Hollywood has taken a lot of these very sacred principles and cheapened them.
Right now, let's take why. You know, why do they, why do they even know about it? So, and I think that's what's kind of happening is these initiatory groups and covens and traditions are trying to almost erase what's been done by doing their quote unquote gatekeeping, and you shouldn't be talking about this because they're trying to bring it back to their traditions. Like it's not, it's out in the public, like where it technically probably shouldn't have been. You know, and again, I'm going to bring it up, Cunninghamism. You know, a lot of those things, yes, very basic, you know, very simple stuff that's in his books that are based on these traditional things. But does Mary down the street, should she be practicing the sacred rite? No.
Right. No, I agree
You
with
know?
you. And here's my thing. That's kind of what I was trying to drive home is that, you know, being with your partner is not the same thing as participating in the great rite.
Right, exactly.
The great rite is something that is absolutely sacred. It's not done lightly, it's not done by everyone, and it serves a specific purpose. And, you know, one of the things that so bothered me about this person's comments is I was like, I didn't divulge anything specific about it. I won't, because to me it is sacred. So, you know, but I found that person's vehemence very interesting because this is somebody that's never ever commented on any of my videos ever. And I had no idea who this individual was. So I don't know if they found the video because they Googled the term and were just going through kind of trying to vent
The
or
police,
you know, exactly, you know, what came on. But part of what bothered me about that was, you know, there are a lot of initiatory rites, and I don't feel that one initiatory group has a monopoly on specific practices within the craft. And that goes back to that foundational practices, those things that run universally through the craft. And you know, it was interesting to see that. I just was kind of, But I totally understand and respect what you're saying because I agree. I don't think it's everybody should, you know, do it. But you, when it's brought into the public spotlight, and what I'm thinking specifically is when we did this, it was during that time of the American Horror Story Coven, that particular series, and they show this. Some aspect of this actually. And I was absolutely horrified that they'd done that because again, to me, they're taking something that is far greater than what they presented it as, and they're cheapening it.
And I think that's mo I would think the basis behind that person's commenting and that is probably because of that, like trying to like almost erase what's been put out there because like I'm on the fence with things too because I love entertainment. I love all of that. But yes, that specific thing is a secret, right?
And it shouldn't, and I agree with them to the extent that it shouldn't be just lightly tossed out there, like, oh yeah, this is something all witches do, da 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 da. Not necessarily, not all the time, and certainly not as frequently as people think, because you'd be surprised surprised. Well, you may not be surprised, actually, how frequently people will ask you about that. Oh, do you have orgies? Well, no. Do you? Is there something about you I should know? You know, but when people find out you practice the craft, it's like, you know, do you, it goes along with that. Do you worship Satan? No, but you know, he was doing a fair amount of worshiping the other day himself. You know, I mean, it's, you come up with stupid things to say to people.
I honestly, a lot of times when people say, you know, well, do you really worship Satan? I say, yes.
Their faces are priceless.
I'm like, yeah, I do. Yeah. Because
exactly what I do.
You know, yes, of course, I do it for that little shock value too. But then I go and explain. I'm like, you know, the whole concept behind, you know, Satan and Lucifer, you know, wherever you want to look at it, you know, really comes from or how can I put it this in a way that there's a lot of connections.
Right.
With, you know, with Satan and a godhead in witchcraft. You know, and one of the people that I work with, my business partner, he works with demons. You know, I sell things that are specifically for that practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I understand it. I've actually utilized it recently. You know, and it's a completely different thing than I thought it was myself. So I was educated, you know, and so, but, you know, when people ask that, I just say yes. I'm like, yeah, I do. But I also, have a goddess, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know, that's kind of how I do it. And yeah, it's for that shock value, but it's more of the shock value to educate. Not so much to like, shut them off.
To just shock. Yeah. Now, what's the most unusual question somebody's ever asked you that was not a practitioner, something that they wanted to know about your practice? And you're just kind of going, really? Did you just ask me this?
Honestly, I don't think I've ever had it. I think it's because I try to be honest and open about things as much as I can in the spiritual practice. And when I have a lot of customers, I have Christian customers, you know, that come in for specific things and stuff like that. You know, and I think because the way I approach it, or at least the way I come off is I don't separate whether you're Christian or pagan or whatever, you know, it's, and I gear the answers to what they are going to understand.
Right.
And the reason why I could do that is because I understand those basics, going back again to those Hermetic principles. I don't care if you call it Shama Lama Ding Dong. It doesn't matter. Right. I think I'm, like you said, I'm more approachable in that way. And it's gotten out that that's how I am. Like we have a church right next door to the shop. And they're a little bit off. from us, but we're not off from that,
right? I find that to be the case very frequently, you know, especially here. We live in the Bible Belt, so you got a lot of Southern Baptist, a lot of Church of Christ, and now I was raised Church of Christ, so I understand their thinking, so I'm able to respond. And most of the time I try to be like you. I try to be very educational in how I respond. I try to let them know it may not be what they have been taught it is. But at the same time, every now and then I've got to whip out with something just tacky. Because like at the Walmart the other day.
Well, yeah. I mean, you got to have fun with it too.
Well, you know, there was a lady that was looking at I happened to be wearing a pentacle necklace that day because I felt I needed that protectionary energy with me. I was having kind of a kind of day. And this lady is just giving me the dirtiest look in line. And she's looking at me and she's narrowing her eyes at me. And then I'm checking out and I'm getting ready to leave, she walks back to me and says, I will pray for you. And I smiled and said, and I'll cast a spell for you. Her face.
Well, there's a perfect example. When I did the Pocono Witches Festival, we had protesters, you know, And they were out there. They were praying for us. They were very calm. They weren't the crazy ones. And they were very calm. And it was cold that day. We went out and we gave them coffee, hot chocolate, water, you know, and they were praying for us. And we thanked them. You know, so there's the nice side. There's the nice side.
Fire upon your enemies.
Right. Right. You know, this is the nice side. But in a case like yours, you know, and that things like that have happened to me, too. You know, I don't hide anything about myself. So I, in a line, it was actually in a line at a supermarket. And, you know, of course, you know, I have my pantacle on and who knows what else I was wearing that day. And, you know, they're just looking at me and looking and giving that look, you know, that look.
Yeah, that look.
You know, they didn't want to step another foot closer because they're afraid. And then, you know, sometimes I'll just turn around and go, keep looking at me and I'll turn you into a toad, you know? So, sometimes you just got to like throw it in their face. But in most cases, you know, I respect it all. So it's not like even the woman next door. When I was looking for the shop, when I was actually looking for a shop and knowing that the church was there, I called them before anything. And I said, this is what I'm thinking of doing. You know, I gave them the opportunity. If they felt uncomfortable, I wouldn't have done that. I don't want to put that animosity on anyone, you know, having the shop. They never called me back. So I was like, all right, well, screw it.
Right. You reached out and you did your diligence I think that's kind of what makes some of us as practitioners a little bit different than some of our counterparts in other faiths, is that I find we're far more willing to live and let live in a lot of cases than other people. But, you know, to be honest with you, even living here in the Bible Belt, that really was the one and only time I can think that I've had a negative experience. And I've had a lot of people that have asked me questions.
Yes.
You know,
they'll
ask me really cautiously, you know, are you a practitioner? And yes. I'm like, of what? And you're like, of the craft. And I'm like, yes. You know, and their eyes might get real big and they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah. And a lot of times it sparks a curiosity in them. And I don't know if it's a Harry Potter Hollywood type of thing, you know, but people have very mixed messages about what it is.
You know, that was, again, that goes back to that where I'm on a fine line when it comes to Hollywood and gatekeeping and all of that, back to that other conversation. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, they shouldn't portray witches this way and that way. Look, if there's 20 people who are now interested in witchcraft and one of those people begin to understand how everything works, and I'm not just talking about practicing, just understanding through that, then it's done its job.
Right. Exactly. I, you know, here's where I am, because I'm like you, I'm kind of on the fence. I understand the secrecy and the silence in some regard, and I understand some of the gatekeeping, but at the same time, witchcraft has survived as a practice. Magical practices have survived because somebody talked to somebody else about it. And if you're looking to not be persecuted, you need to be educated. Because what I tell people, because when people see I work with the Morrigan and with Carnunos, and a lot of people aren't even aware of who the Morrigan is or where she comes from or what she represents deity wise but they look at my statuary of Carnunos and they're like, oh, you have a statue of Satan there. And I'm like, no, that's not Satan, that is Carnunos. He is a Celtic god of the forest and of nature. You know, and I use that as a teachable moment. I said, now, really, why do you think that's Satan? Because that imagery was used, because if you want someone to stop worshiping something or stop practicing something, what do? You instill fear about it. You tell them it's bad and it's evil.
And that goes back to why, when people ask if I worship the devil, I say yes.
Precisely. You know, they need to understand that what they've been taught all these years isn't necessarily the truth.
Right. Right. And it's we're not there. You know, I put that as a disclaimer in some conversations. You know, I'm not here to change your faith. I'm not here to change you and corrupt, you know, what you believe. But
I'm here to help you understand why I practice what I do.
Yes, exactly. Right. It's just a little bit of education. And I try to do it quite often. I mean, it happens. It ends up happening quite often anyway. You know, so it's. And I think that's like going back to, you know, do I find myself in those situations? I don't think I do, because I've gotten that reputation where it's about education in a not throw it down your throat education way. It's right. You know, I understand where you're coming from, and I'll use words that they know. That's part of their own belief system.
Right. I think you and I approach it much the same way, because for me, it's, you know, my practice, my spirituality is my personal business. It's even with my husband, because my husband is a cradle Catholic, but he's not practicing. Mm-hmm. And he has a lot of issues with the church and with Christianity as a whole. I think a lot of the same issues I had that eventually I had to say, I can't continue on this path because it does not resonate with what I understand logically, how the world works for me, my worldview. I'm not disparaging anybody who is Christian. I know a lot of good people that are Christian. Great. Mm-hmm. That path works for them, and I'm happy for them. If they want to pray for me, I'm not offended by that at all. Bless their hearts. I'm happy that they are wanting to do something for me. I will offer them my energy in any format that they feel, because, you know, I think that's one of the things that my husband thought, well, you know, what do you pray to? You pray to a tree? No, I love trees. I always have. To me, they are indeed sacred, but sacred in the same way that a child is, or that you are, or that anything that is created is, because it is a piece of the divine. What is created carries a piece of the divine within it, always. I said, no, I worship the spirit that created the tree, that resides within the tree as the creator.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and which, in fact, and this is where I would go with, you know, if I was in the conversation, quote the Bible, because right in there, you know, God is everywhere and everything. So
all things, even you. Yeah, exactly. You know, so I have found that, you know, I think when I first became open about practicing the craft, because I've always practiced, frankly, I've been reading tarot since I was 11. So, you know, I was away from it for a long time because I was trying really hard to be this good Christian girl, you know, woman and a wife and a mother and raise my children, quote unquote, the right way. Because again, it's a religion that rules by fear. You know, if there's only one way to God, it's through Christ. If you don't believe that, you're going to hell. You know,
sadly, it's not so much the spirituality aspect of it. That's the institution.
Right. Exactly. Thank you. And so, you know, if for a long time, I put aside my what people would call gifts, you know, my clairvoyancy and my ability to tap into that and my ability to perceive things and I pushed it aside and I tried to cut it off. And at one point I really did cut it off, you know, completely, because I was told that was evil, you know? And as I came to, you know, it just, there were a culmination of things that finally I just went, you know what, we're done here, folks. I can't help what I feel or what I perceive or what I hear or what I'm told spiritually, any more than you can control being hungry or, you know, needing to use the restroom or, you know, anything else. It is a part of the fabric of who I am. So I think at first my husband thought this was like a fad and it was kind of cute. And then he got really hostile towards it. You know, this is going to bring down your business and people are not going to want to do business with you because you're a witch. I'm like, look, I'm a speech pathologist. I'm damn good at what I do. If people judge me based on my religious practices, which are really none of their business, that I don't really talk about openly. I mean, if people ask me, I don't hide it, but I don't, you know, that's not the first thing that comes out of my mouth is I'm a practicing witch. By the way, let me evaluate your child's speech. You know, I don't do that. If people see something or notice something and they ask me, I will talk about it. And I put it in words they can understand that are not going to, you know, purposely invoke fear.
Right.
You know, but at the same time, I don't hide it either, because it is a part of who I am. And if they can't accept that I'm a good speech pathologist and I'm going to do the best I can by my plan of care and rely on my education, then that's their problem and I don't need their business.
Right.
And I think once he realized that it wasn't going to have a major impact on my business, COVID's had more of an impact on it than my religious practices. And we're still here, you know, and we're growing again, finally. So I think he started to kind of set aside some of that. And the fact that I was willing to stand up to him about it, too, because I've always acquiesced to everything he's ever wanted or needed. And for this, I was like, no, I'm not giving this up. It's a part of who I am and it means too much to me. And if you don't like it, there's the door. Don't want to hit you where the goddess split you, buddy. Have a nice life. And once I put it in those terms, suddenly it was like, oh, okay. So now he's curious about it.
Right.
You know, he's wanting to understand it more, which I'm happy about, because at the very least, I'm not asking him to participate. I'm not asking him to join a coven or be a practitioner himself. Personally, myself, I think he's more witch than I am. In a lot of ways, the man's intuition is off the charts.
And it's funny because one of my close friends, she respects me and I respect her, but she's very, very Christian. But she is honestly more witch than half of the people I know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I tell it all the time. I'm like, she's like, she laughs it off, you know, and we have intelligent conversations, you know, and she sees my point and I see her point and, you know, and this and that. It's just her faith. And by all means, I do not discriminate on that. And when it comes to faith, you know, and, you know, it's just that's the relationship that we have. But you're right. Like sometimes those diehard Christians, they're more witch than half of these people calling themselves witch.
Well, and like it or not, there is a mystical tradition to even Roman Catholicism. They have their own mystical tradition. So, you know, it's just he's so darned intuitive. Like he'll pick up on things. My mother-in-law, I swear, was a medium. I know. And speak to people.
Yeah.
You know? And I think my daughter is too. But, you know, he will know things that there's no possible way he should know it. So it's interesting.
Well, and, you know, and I like, you know, I always say, you know, and you used the term before, and it's a word I can't stand when it comes to those things, is gifts. And I know it's the easiest way to explain it to people.
Right.
Because everybody can do it. Yes.
Everybody has the gift. It's not a gift. It's a birthright.
Yeah. In some way, yeah. Like, I mean, some people, I view it the same as art. You know, everybody can draw. I don't care. I don't want to hear it. I went to art school. Everybody can draw. However, some people are born with a better talent or learn how to have that talent through skill. So, right. That's how I kind of view that. It's like, it's not a gift. Everybody can do it. It takes work, number one, like anything with spirituality. It takes work, number one. But number two, some people are just a little bit more apt in it. My thing is cards. But you throw runes in front of me and I don't know. It's all Chinese to me.
You know? Exactly. It's all great to me.
Everybody has their thing. There are people, I know rune readers that are phenomenal. And I don't get it.
Yeah, I've kind of wanted to branch into becoming more comfortable, but you know, for me, it's cards and it's crystal scrying, you know, and when I got Lucille, and I love her, you know, my husband asked me, well, how does this thing work? You know, looking at you see the future. I said, yeah, see, there you are Hollywoodizing that again. That's not exactly how it works. But I think Hollywood has in some way done a phenomenal job in trying to make visible that which is not visible, really.
Yes.
They have tried to conceptualize and make visual where everyone can understand how things work, but in doing so, they've kind of skewed the reality a little. You know, when you are pointing your finger or using your wand, you are directing your energy. And, you know, it doesn't come out of your finger as a light. You might see it that way, but that's how Hollywood was able to convey that transference.
How else do you do it? Otherwise, you
How do you make it visible to people? And it's not as dramatic, like, you know, if I, you know, it's more like in Practical Magic. I hope you get chicken pox. You know, nothing comes out of her finger, but the darn kid got the chicken pox. It was her intent. I'm like, it's more like that.
You're right. And, you know, my aunt, you know, who was my first teacher, during understanding how that is, you know, imagination is for kids, especially because is key in keeping that, you know, in learning how to direct energy and learning the process of it. We used to play Star Wars.
Trusting yourself with it. Because I think that's the biggest thing, is that we poo-poo imagination. But when you trust your imagination, that's what opens the door for your magic.
That's exactly it. You know, she started off, she's like, all right, I'm going to teach you about magic and intention and directing energy. And I was like, oh, this is cool, you know. And she did it in a way by utilizing entertainment and utilizing movement. So she said, we're gonna have a lightsaber fight, just like in Star Wars, right? So we had tubes, you know, like the wrapping paper tubes or whatever.
Right. Those are so much fun. We call them doinks. We doink each other with them.
The next lesson was she removed that and we still had the same fight. So we were all spinning around and hitting nothing with nothing, but our imaginations put those lightsabers in our hands.
Right.
So to us, they really were in our hands. And that's what magic is. It's like it's really there, you know, but in movies, how do you portray that?
Right. Exactly. And again, I think that they've done a really good job. In fact, too good of a job, so that now people, that's what they expect. When you tell them that you're doing magic, that's what they're looking for.
And in a way, I think that's okay for people to do that. And that's what, again, being on the fence, because if five people believe that, and one actually takes the time and reads the truth on what we do, then that one person just became more enlightened.
Exactly. So it's turning light to someone else.
Right. Movies can be the gateway. It's up to there's that free will that every spirituality and religion has. There's that free will to take that initiative and learn.
Well, I think movies are a gateway for many modern witches. It's their first introduction. How many kids took an active interest in witchcraft because of Harry Potter or because of Practical Magic? That's a good example. You know, right. I think that movie really did a wonderful job on explaining a lot of the tenets of the craft without making it seem like fantasy.
It had a lot of that. Like, and it's funny because like everybody brings up that movie, and honestly, I hate it. But that's entertainment wise, you know, and. It where
That's
I
a woman's movie and you're not a woman.
but it is talked about a lot, you know, and how it represents the craft and how it represents things. And you know, to be honest, yes, it represents it in a good light, different from other movies, but at the same time, it's also representing it in a way that's also not true. Because we don't all just, you know, hug trees and, you know, dance around naked in the forest. Like,
you'll never see me doing that. Believe me, you don't want to see that.
We shouldn't be. Not all love and light, you know.
Right.
The universe is a balance. There's dark. Yeah, you know what? Mm-hmm. If you're going to mess with me, If you're
I'm
going to
gonna
mess,
make sure you feel it.
I'm not going to hold back. Like, I don't care that you know, but I don't follow that Wiccan way.
That's exactly what I was going to say is then we get in those people leaving those comments about, but what about the rule of three? Oh, Lord, please don't let me get started on that. I remember a few years back, I actually rewrote the read. I don't know if I even have a copy of it here. I put it in my grimoire, but I rewrote the read. And basically it was, you know, yeah, you should not, you know, seek to do harm to others, but basically if there comes a time to act, you need to act. The power of the witch and act. And, you know, you'll be judged by the Lord and Lady, you know, or the universe, the deities. There, I do believe. Okay, here's where the physics comes into it. When you throw a rock into a pond, that ripples out from the source. But guess what? Once it hits wherever it's going, it comes back to the source. Now it's attenuated. You can block the effects by putting a barrier up around it once you've sent out that initial wave. You know, to me, the wave doesn't come back three times stronger. So that tether, that line, is how you're able to trace magic back to where it came from.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. You have
But that. At the same time, it doesn't come back three times stronger.
Right.
You know, right. So yes, yeah, some of what you do is going to come back to you in some form, but it's attenuated and you can block it. If you
well,
know
what you're saying. You also have to think of if people, you know, using the metaphor of the ripples, you know, that ripple that you did, that you created by throwing that rock, you don't know what that's going to change
right.
for something down the line. And I always try to explain that with magic that, you know, everybody's like, oh, you know, I only do, I hate the term, white magic. And
yeah, I understand that term. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I only do healings. Okay. And this is how I put it. I said, all right, you're only doing positive things. And that's another word I don't like to use with things, but only doing positive things. All right, so what about cause and effect? Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes, you know, all right, yes, you healed your friend. Great. You're doing a good service. You're doing your thing. However, what's the consequences? What's the full consequences of healing that friend? Maybe now that friend can't go to the doctor, right, and pay the doctor who has to buy an outfit for his daughter's recital and now doesn't have the money because you healed your friend. You don't know the consequences of it. And I think that things like the read and all of that was kind of put in place to take a look at, as much as you can, the consequences of it. Everything's going to have a cause and effect. Science, right? Everything's going to have a cause and effect. We can't determine whether or not it's going to be a quote unquote positive or a negative.
Right. Which is why I throw in the and harming none.
Right. Exactly. You know, but here's the thing. Like, you don't even, I used to kind of do that too, if they're throwing in that harm none. But then when you think about it, the universe has to balance itself out. So right. if you're adding that in, that actually puts a block on your magical intention, because maybe if it's all right, well, you're gonna get this done and you're gonna say, you know, harm none, well then what you cause, that ripple, may actually harm someone in some way. Now you're negating what your intention is because you said
harm none.
Right? So
it limits the effectiveness.
Right. It's still going to happen, but it's just not going to be as effective. At least that's the way I see it. And going back to your ripple theory, it's the same thing. It works in that same way, because if you don't want that little wave, that little ripple to, let's say, throw off a fish from getting its first bite of the morning, because you're harming that fish, right? It could be the last mosquito in the pond, whatever.
Right.
And, you know, then think about all those ripples. What's going to change? What's going to go along that line? If you don't want that to happen, then don't throw the rock.
Exactly. Thank you. You cannot conceive or understand everything, but we have to make decisions and we have to take actions. And if you're not going to stand in your power, then don't throw the rock.
Right. Yeah,
you've
exactly.
And now at the same time, I mean, you've got to be willing to accept that there may be some negative repercussions that come from your magic. And some of those could be serious. And you need to be prepared to take the responsibility for that. And some of the guilt, if you're going to feel guilty about it, or you're going to have to decide to not feel guilty and say, well, that's what the universe intended to come from the action that I did for this other thing.
Right.
You know, there are always unintended consequences to your actions, some of which you may never, ever know. But you right. can't sit there and fret over those things, or you'll never act. We would never step outside our front doors. Exactly. None of us would exist because nobody would step forward to have a child if we were that, you know,
right.
about everything.
Right. It's 100% right. You know, I always say, you know, well, you know, because people say, aren't you, you know, a little afraid that, you know, you're going to hurt somebody, there's going to be a negative effect on somebody. And as long as it's not within my circle, honestly, and I'm being honest, if it's not within my circle, it's not going to
matter. I don't really care. I don't think about it.
Right. I'm not going to think about it because, again, if I have to think about all those things that my little stone is going to cause, you'll never get anything done.
You will never throw it in the pond. I mean, who's to say when you throw your stone in the pond, you don't hit a fish square on the head.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not about the cautiousness. It's about understanding that there is a cause and effect. If we understand as a cause and effect, we can gear it to kind of, you know, not have it hit your grandmother who's 90 years old.
Right.
But we, you know, unfortunately, that's just the laws of the universe, which is why that whole black and white, you know, whatever, on magic and things and that, because you know what? Do you really think that lion is thinking about how sad it is and it's going to go, you know, eat that and kill that?
Thank you. That's my argument for vegans. Not that I'm, you know, against veganism. I respect that because my daughter is vegan. But that's what I tell her. I'm like, why do you, you know, you don't fault the lion for taking out that gazelle, which really may actually help the entire herd of gazelles because that gazelle could be slowing them all down. But you're going to fault me for having a hamburger.
Right. So, you know, but now take that. That's regular mundane. Now take that in a magical sense.
Right.
It's the same thing. Like if it's okay for them, but it's not okay for us. We live under the same laws. I don't care if we're civilized or supposedly civilized. We still live under the same law.
Enlightenment. I love it. Yes. Yes. I totally agree with you on that front. And I agree. So if you're not willing to take the ripples and rock your boat, don't throw your rock.
Right.
Well, Eddie, with that, we've actually been on for almost 2 hours, and I know you've got to get with your family. But I do appreciate you coming on the podcast. So
thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. So go ahead and give your website real quick for everybody.
Sure. And you can find everything, This Old Witch, the store, all of it on through my website because they're all connected. But it's www.e-massey.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for coming on. I really do appreciate it.
No, thank you.